now broadcasting the Webcomic Beacon with your hosts, Fess and Tanya.
Welcome to episode 12 of the Webcomic Beacon. This is Fess.
And I'm Tanya.
And with us tonight we have a special guest, Jersey of SugaryCereals.com and the podcast Art and Story. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And how do you pronounce your last name?
It's pronounced Drozd, rhymes with nose.
Drozd, okay, I think I called you Drozd on the last show.
That's a common pronunciation for that, so no big deal.
All right, cool. And let's see, you're from mostly representing SugaryCereals.com tonight. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is?
Sure. Sugary Cereals is a online and print comics anthology, and all the stories are designed to evoke the feeling of Saturday morning cartoons. We all remember some kinds of cartoons from Saturdays when we were kids, whether it's Thundar the Barbarian or even upwards to currently the Powerpuff Girls, even though, you know, nowadays there aren't really Saturday morning cartoons the way there used to be. But the stories are designed to evoke that feel, and what I mean by that is that Saturday morning cartoons typically had a very short time slot. You had 21 minutes to introduce characters, introduce a conflict, and have a thrilling adventure. So you had to use a lot of shorthand with the writing. You had to introduce characters very quickly and make them very loud and vibrant, and the stories typically were very fast and fun. And it's all ages comics, but when we say that, we mean all ages, as in the young and the young at heart.
So like kiddie stuff.
Like, pardon me?
Kiddie stuff.
Well, all ages is an evocative term, and a lot of people tend to think, when you say all ages, you think of it's dumbed down, it's Disney-fied, and that's not really what we're aiming for here. We're aiming for something that parents can read with their kids, and both will get something out of it. You know, this isn't Teletubbies. This is
he invoked the T word.
We're published by 01 Comics, and the publisher, Barry Gregory, he coined the phrase, I think, best. He said, there's a big difference between Dora the Explorer and Watership Down. And the watchwords that we live by with the project is we try to create something that's both fun for grown-ups and kids. But what that means is that there's a lot of things we can't do in this anthology. Like, we can't do stories that celebrate ennui or hatred, and we can't have certain kinds of content. You know, like broadcast standards and practices stuff.
Right.
You can't see on television, so...
So, what is 01 Comics?
Well, 01 Comics, Barry would be able to answer that question better than me, but 01 Comics it began as a comics anthology on the web, and it's undergone a lot of metamorphosis over the years, and it's branched out to become Kablam, the digital printing company. That's at kablam.com, it's kablam.com, and then they have their fulfillment house, Indie Planet, at indieplanet.com. So, 01 is currently being revamped and revitalized, redesigned, but Sugary Cereals is one of the first new components of that publishing model. Is one of the neat things we're trying to do with Sugary Cereals is answer some of the what some might call shortcomings of webcomics anthologies, in that a lot of times webcomics anthologies are repurposed material from existing webcomics.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be comics that's running on the individual creator site as well as the anthology site.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing brand new content. And the other thing that a lot of webcomics anthologies don't have is they don't have a print component. So we wanted to have something where there was new content and there was a print component and something that updates very frequently. Because as I'm sure, I think you guys have actually talked about this in previous episodes, there's almost a rule, an unwritten rule, that you have to update as frequently as possible in order to build an audience. And weekly comics struggle with that, right?
Yeah.
And daily comics thrive because people want content delivered on a regular basis, on a quick, rapid, give it to me now kind of thing. So we developed a model where we can update every day, and what's more is we're constantly cycling through new stories all the time. So every month we do 24 pages of content, updated almost every day, including weekends some weeks. And there's three stories that are focused each month, 8 pages apiece. And like the cartoon style, there's a cliffhanger. They're told in 8-page acts. So just like you're watching G.I. Joe, and suddenly the plane's about to crash and say, G.I. Joe will be back after these messages, and then, oh boy, I can't wait to get back after the commercials to find out if they get out of this mess. So we're all the creators are encouraged to do that as well, right? So you end each act on like a some kind of tension point, not necessarily a cliffhanger, but something like that. So you get three stories told in these little act breaks, and at the end of each month, we collect it in print and we sell it on the site. And Kablam and Indie Planet are our print component, where we print it through Kablam, we sell it through Indie Planet.
Nice.
That sounds like a lot of middlemen.
Well, actually, not really. As far as compiling the print component for the series, that's all done by me as the editor of the anthology. So we have, you know, upwards of 20 different people working on the project at any given time. And, you know, we're working months and months and months in advance in order to make sure we have enough content to update daily, because there's no way we could expect anybody to do a full page, full color comic on a daily basis.
Right.
When, as you are painfully aware, you know, it, we all have day jobs, right?
Yeah. So, well, actually, I work overnight, so it's a night job.
Or night job. We have some other means of employment that prevents us from drawing comics all the time.
Right.
But even, I mean, I'm a freelance illustrator, and even I would have trouble doing a full page, full color comic every day.
Right.
With any kind of satisfactory quality.
Right.
We work months in advance, and then as each month's content is completed, I do all the graphic design, put the book together, send it off to Kablam, and Kablam is actually a pretty small operation, comparatively speaking. And, you know, Barry prints it up for us, and then they sell it on the website, and people can order the comic. And the great thing about print on demand is that the books are never out of print. So we're on issue 5 right now, and issue 1 is still in print, unlike the traditional print publishing model where, you know, 6 months back, that issue is no longer in print, and you have to go to the back issue bins in order to get those books. You
right.
can always go to Indie Planet and get all the issues up till the most current one.
Okay, so Kablam is who prints it, and then the Indie Planet, they sell it.
Correct.
Okay, so that makes sense. And so there's like no like initial amount of books that you have to buy ahead of time. It's just entirely on demand. Like you order it, it gets printed.
Exactly. I mean, you've heard of services like Lulu.com, right?
Right.
Right.
It's exactly like that. You print as few as one or as many as 100 as you need them. And the neat thing is that you know, you can even order none. You know, you can submit a book to sell on Indie Planet and not even order a copy for yourself. So there's really no startup cost for you. And the quality of Kablam, Fess, I think I sent you some books. Did you get them by any chance?
Oh yes, they're all the way over here on my couch. And yeah, I received several of the books, and I got the sugary cereals here. And yes, it's very nice printing. I haven't purchased, you know, actual comic books from a store or anything, so I can't. I can't be an authority to compare it. But it's like, yeah, this is really good printing.
Well, I did notice here on the site on Kablam, it says that you can get a print sample for a shipping fee, and that fee will be credited toward your next order. So if you're worried about quality, that kind of takes care of that.
That's exactly right. And Barry, one of the reasons I pitched Sugary Cereals as a project to Barry instead of something like Lulu or something like Comic Express was I actually met Barry at a Comic Con a couple years back, and he is aggressively interested in making his print quality match that of offset printing. Now, there's some differences. It's a toner-based system, so you're going to notice that on the covers, if you hold it up to the light at an obtuse angle, you're going to notice that the black ink has a little bit of a raised look to it.
Yeah.
But that's just due to the technology that it is. It's not an ink that is being absorbed into the paper. It's an ink that's being laid onto the paper. But for all intents and purposes, it's indistinguishable from, in my opinion anyway, it's pretty hard to tell the difference between a print-on-demand comic and a web offset comic nowadays.
Yeah. The quality has really come up.
Yeah, it's come a long way.
I'm looking at these, and you got the covers are the very nice. The inner pages are a little bit more, you know, I think they're like slightly more matte than the cover, but it's still very smooth. You really can't tell any type of imperfections or anything. So it does look, you know, if anyone's curious, I mean, it does look very professional. But I do have to ask, what's the difference between Kablam and the other print-on-demand things? Is it, like, what would like, What is the difference, if any?
Well, I haven't done anything through Comic Express in a long time, but so I really can't say anything about their quality as of late. Mm-hmm. But I have seen books done through Lulu, and Lulu can be, from my experience, now I want to make this clear, this is just my experience, it can be very hit or miss. You can get books where there's some light spots in the gray tones if you're doing a black and white book. And Lulu's, it seems to be a bigger operation, so there's more cooks in the kitchen, and it seems a little bit more, less personal. Mm-hmm. Whereas Kablam is a smaller operation, there's much more, from my experience, much more quality control. And while this can be a plus or a minus, it means that Kablam, when they get busy, it can be difficult to get somebody in the email. But from my experience, they've always been very attentive and very very caring about their clients. And I'm not saying, and I know, I'm trying to be careful. I don't want to say that Lulu isn't. I'm just saying that. I know people who have printed stuff in Lulu. I've seen the books. I've seen the imperfections, and I've heard about how difficult it is sometimes to get stuff turned around again fast. That Lulu will replace the books, but sometimes it takes a long time. Yeah. Whereas I know for a fact, from my own experience and from friends who have printed through Kablam, whenever there has been any kind of a problem with the printing, Barry jumps right on it and turns around. He'll replace the copies very quickly and judiciously. It's weird because I feel like I have to make the disclaimer or the disclosure here that, I essentially work with Kablam or work for Kablam because Barry is our publisher, so it's...
Right.
You have to take what I say with a grain of salt, but I really...
You're biased.
Well,
but I do genuinely believe in what they're doing, and that's why I pitched Sugary Cereals to them, because I thought if anybody understands the potential of print-on-demand and what it could be in conjunction with the webcomics publishing model, these guys get it.
Right.
Well, I noticed you also, Kablam also has the, it looks like the same sizes that Lulu and Comic Express deals with, standard manga, and then also hardcovers, t-shirts even, mini posters, flyers. So, I know a number of people who would order their books through Lulu and then comics through Comic Express, so this looks like a little more one-stop.
Yeah. Yeah, I think actually, I haven't checked in a while, but I think the cost of printing actual comic books through Lulu is a little bit higher than Kablam. I'm pretty sure that's the case.
About to ask that, because it's like each of the Sugary Cereals, and what are they, like, how many pages are they?
Over 24 pages.
About 24 pages.
Yeah.
And then you have, they're $3.50 each. Now, that seems a little on the low end to me. Are you cutting back on the amount of profit per book you're getting, or is it just much cheaper to print? Or,
well, I don't know how much I'm at liberty to disclose on that, but I do I can say that the profit margin isn't that huge, and this is the thing I want to make a case for here, is that we creators, both mm-hmm. me as a creator and all the other creators on board, the only compensation we get for this project is on printing,
right?
So you got issue one, there's three different creative teams in there, and they got to split the profit on that. So I priced them competitively with the current comics industry pricing. Most books go for around $3 nowadays. So
yeah.
I didn't want to charge too high for fear of not being able to compete, but it is a little bit higher than I think that the standard comic cover price right now. But the profit margin isn't huge. We're not getting rich off this, and we're still a young project comparatively speaking. We're only really
right.
We've actually been working on Sugary Cereals since last year. A lot of us creators, my contribution equalizes of the divide. I started this time last year, and it only came out in print in September of last year. So. For us, it's actually, we've been invested in this thing for a long time, but from the reader's perspective, it's really only about 6 months old. So we're still in the process of building an audience, and if the model works, if we build up an audience, and if there are people out there who are interested in comics for that they can read with their kids, then if we wind up selling hundreds and hundreds of issues, then yeah, we stand to actually make a respectable, not necessarily a living income, but something that justifies the work that we put into it.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like a good system.
Yeah, I think the $3.50 is well worth the price of the Sugary Cereals books for sure. And the shipping, if you just get basic shipping, is less than $2 even. So if you want to, like, you got all the way up to $4 right now, is at least during the time of this show. But, yeah, I'm definitely going to be buying the other two. Since I got 1 and 2 here, I'm going to get 3 and 4. And you're working on 5 right now?
5 is updating right now every day. And we've got some, I mean, at the risk of sounding like a Stan Lee-style huckster here, we've got some really great people on board. And this thing started out as an invitation-only project. I went out and combed the internet looking for people who were doing stuff that I thought really felt like the kind of work that we wanted for the project. And we've got Kitsy and Kimono Stereo of Nemu Nemu. I don't know if you've ever read that comic, but it's a three times a week updating strip-style comic. And they did it for issue 4, 5, and 6. They're doing a three-part page-style story about their characters. And we've got Matt Putnam Pouliot, who did a story for issue 4 called Daring Dodo. And he is phenomenal. He is going to make so – he's going to turn so many heads in the coming years. I can't believe more people don't know about this guy. He's just incredible. His website is Dial K for Comics, and that's Dial K for K-O-M-I-C-S. Really incredible stuff there. I'm such a huge fan of his, and it's weird editing his work because I'm editing it and at the same time I'm drooling over it like a fanboy. So I feel weird, like, saying, you know, I don't want to give him any, you know, advice, but at the same time I, you know, have to act like an editor about this thing. But then we got Mark Rudolph, who's another guy who's just doing incredible work, and he does a story called Curse of the Pharaohs, which really feels like 1970s kind of Hanna-Barbera, Johnny Quest kind of style.
Yeah, I was noticing that.
And he's one of those guys where it's just like I look at his work and go, why aren't more people talking about this guy? And I just feel so lucky to have him on board. And he's also my co-host on a lot of the different creators appear on our podcast. We do a podcast on about Sugary Cereals called the Saturday Supercast, which updates not regularly, but whenever we can get people on to do an interview, we interview the creators and we talk about the different ideas behind Sugary Cereals.
Does it update on Saturdays?
We try to. Whenever we do live episodes, we try to do them on Saturdays. So.
Well, cool. Well, right now we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll pick up where we left off and go into a different direction. So we'll be right back. The Webcomic Beacon is proud to be an affiliate of The Geek Media. TheGeekMedia.com has a number of geek-related websites, podcasts, and blogs for you to check out. Check out TheGeekMedia.com.
Webcomic Beacon is hosted by Zephyr.net. Free hosting for free thinkers.
All right, we're back, and again, we're talking with Jersey Drodes. Draws? Shoot, how do I say?
you want to get really into a weird area about this? My name is actually pronounced Yeja Drozd, but it's been anglicized to Jersey, so I just go by Jersey. I don't really it's torture to have to try to repeat it over and over again to people. No, it's Yeja. Yaji? Yeja. Yeju? Yeja. No, Yeja. Jersey is fine. Just call me Jersey. So don't worry about it. People trip over my name. I've dealt with that all my life. It's no big deal.
Okay. We're with this guy from SugaryCereals.com. And we've been talking a bit about printing your comics. And mostly about Sugary Cereals, and through this service, Kablam. Now, is this, you said it used to be invite only, so anyone could kind of submit their thing for printing and sale through Kablam and Indie Planet?
Oh, well, when I said that, what I was talking about with Sugary Cereals was invitation only. Project, for that anthology, we were only inviting creators. We didn't have an open submission policy. Okay. Kablam is open to everybody, and I highly recommend them. Not just because I work with the guys, but it seems to me, I mean, you know, I've been publishing webcomics since 2003, and I love webcomics, and I love the freedom it affords you. I love the fact that it's so easy to build an audience and interact with fans and everything. But I grew up in the 80s. I grew up on print comics. I like print, I don't. And anybody else who wants to have their stuff in print, they can, as long as you know how to make a TIFF file. That's that Kablam really requires. They have a template on their site. If you go to, I think it's under printing specs. Is the
a
link
TIFF
at the top.
File? What the heck
that
is
makes
that?
Perfect sense.
It's a TIFF file, and there are tutorials all over the web on how to make them. And actually, you could just save a file as a TIFF in Photoshop or your favorite image editing program. It's pretty easy to do. And there, Kablam even has a template you can download, a PSD Photoshop template that you can download with their margins on it and everything. So it's really hard to mess it up. If you can make a TIFF file and if you know how to number pages, then you are ready to print your book. I highly recommend, though, that you do read the printing specifications, because some people actually do kind of trip on that sometimes. You know, they'll
We could put up a numbering tutorial, too, because you'd be amazed how people screw that up.
what comes after three again? Oh, yeah.
You'd be shocked.
Well, I had been thinking about for a while when kind of preparing. I say preparing, but it really wasn't for this show. Because right now I kind of run the unofficial archive of Jenny Everywhere. I don't know if you've heard of Jenny Everywhere before.
I've heard of it.
JennyEverywhere.com used to exist, except the guy who was running it kind of, I guess, went by the wayside. They didn't put it back up after the server crash or something. But I've been kind of taking hold and collecting all of this stuff onto one site at JennyEverywhere.net until I can get the .com. And there's some on there I kind of want to get a hold of, like the old artists, the ones they kind of have like 8 to 10 page stories. And I kind of wanted to find a way to make those available for prints somehow. And I was kind of thinking about that because they seem to be affordable and they look really nice. But of course, I'd have to get like the very, very large resolutions. As far as when people are like considering getting things printed, what is the resolution that people should be scanning and saving at for if they want to have printing in mind?
Well, if you're going to do grayscale or color, you absolutely, the bare minimum is 300 DPI. Mm-hmm. That's dots per inch. And that'll be, if you go into Photoshop, you go into image size, you'll see it in there. You'll see what your image file size is. And again, Kablam has a template you can download, which is actually set to the resolution that you need. And you can just drag and drop your artwork into that template to see if it fits. For black and white, I know that if you're doing stark black and white, no tones, you want to start with at least 600 DPI. There are plenty of tutorials out there to be found, but I know that in web publishing it's 72 DPI, but I've worked in print comics since 1998 or so, and I learned a long time ago, save high-res versions of everything. And so even when I was publishing my work online, I always saved a 300 DPI backup someplace in case I wanted to print it someday. Now, I know that a lot of web comics run into this problem where their earlier archives, they never did that. Or, you know, you have artists who draw all on the tablet and they draw 72 DPI. So that's an unfortunate situation to find yourself in. And at that point, it's like, I guess you're going to make a mini comic then and not a full-size comic. But if it's something you've thought about doing someday, I mean, that's what better way when you're going to a convention to promote yourself besides having flyers is to have, like, a little print book. And how much nicer, I mean, depending on the kind of project you're doing, I mean, obviously there's a reason to do mini comics as well, like photocopied mini comics. As a matter of fact, I've done some with my wife. We did one called Dino Love, which was like a romance comic told with dinosaurs. and that was a very kind of indie, kind of fun, quirky project. We wanted that to feel more like a mini comic. But then when I do things like on Sugary Cereals, it's like I want that to feel like the old 1980s kind of something you'd see on the spinner rack when I was a kid. So that I personally want that to feel more like a comic book. But Kablam also does trade paperbacks. So if you're doing collections of strips, you know, they do perfect binding. Fess, I don't remember if I sent you any perfect bound stuff.
You sent me let's see here. You sent me Sugary Cereals 1 and 2, and you also sent me a copy of The Replacements.
There you go. Yeah. Replacements 1.
Yeah, and The Origin of Jared.
Okay. Yeah, the replacements and the Origin of Jared are projects that I did on my other comics site, Make Like a Tree Comics, with my buddy Sarah Turner. And the replacements, if you look at that, that's an example of the perfect binding that Kablam can do. It has a nice gloss finish.
Right.
It has the glued binding, so you actually can have spine art. I got a graphic novel that it took me 3 years to complete called The Front, done through Kablam, and it just looks beautiful. So, and, you know, if you get an ISBN for it, you can get it carried in libraries or even get it carried on Amazon if you want. I mean, The Front is on Amazon.
Yeah.
They do ISBNs over there, too?
Yeah, there's a little bit of a trickiness to doing that, though, because then you have to know how to process an EPS file into a TIFF file without rasterizing the EPS. And for that, I would recommend looking up some tutorials online.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys don't have their own tutorial over there? I know Lulu offered an ISBN as well, but I never really looked into it.
Lulu does that in-house. You can buy the ISBN through them, if I'm not mistaken, and they put it on your book.
Oh, okay.
But Kablam doesn't offer that service. This is something you have to prepare on your end. It's a little bit more nuts and bolts on your end, but it can be done if you do it right. The problem is if when you buy an ISBN through the different kind of publisher services out there, it comes to you as a vector EPS file. Now, a vector, for those who don't know, it's a mathematical it's mathematical lines. It's not actual pixels on paper or pixels on the screen the way, like a raster file, like when you're painting in Photoshop.
Right.
So if you rasterize that and drop it into a TIFF file without knowing what you're doing, you can actually muddy up the barcode and it won't scan. And they actually say that when you buy the barcode and the ISBN. So it's a new day for publishing, and it's an exciting time. And really all that's left for us comics creators is just be as good as you can, because the bar has so been lowered, the entry fee has been so lowered into breaking in. As long as you're good and you know how to, you know, manage your own business and promote yourself properly, anybody can do this thing.
Right. And I hello? Hello?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was hearing some weird things in my thing. Okay. Let's see. Jersey, when we were talking before online, you wanted to mention or talk about anthologies and collectives in general. I know that there were a couple of different people that have – oh, man, I don't remember. But one of our first people we interviewed, they were doing an anthology through something else. This kind of – is like I've started to see these more often. I think it's kind of a good way to get a bunch of smaller – I don't want to say smaller, but a bunch of different people to get together and kind of pool their resources for something bigger. That maybe will hit like a wider audience.
Well, yeah. I mean, anthologies are a tricky thing because in the traditional comics publishing model, they don't do so good for some reason. And when I was a kid, I discovered a series called Epic Illustrated, which was a magazine style, kind of heavy metal kind of magazine put out by Marvel in the 80s. And I just adored the fact that there was like about 6 to 8 pages of like 10 different stories in this huge magazine. It just seemed so value packed. And even though I didn't love everything in there, there was at least one or two things that I really loved. So, you know, I was actually part of, and I still have a comic on Graphic Smash, one of the Joey Manley's and different anthologies out there. And I absolutely love the different projects that Joey Manley's doing between Gorillamatic and Modern Tales and Graphic Smash. I found a lot of new readers by publishing a comic on Graphic Smash that I didn't have before. So it can be a great way to not only meet other creators, but also net new readers. And it's an interesting thing about meeting other creators because, you know, one of the things that I talk about a lot on the different podcasts I do is making comics is a very lonely business, right? You spend a lot of time at a desk by yourself.
Yeah.
And there are two things that knowing other artists that I find especially helpful. One, crisis counseling. When you fall into that despair that why the heck am I doing this? Why doesn't anybody love me or my work? And then you have that friend there to say, no, you're great, hang in there.
Yeah.
And two is creative stimulation. There's nothing can replace that kind of back and forth you get between people who are really creatively energized and the same kinds of stories you are, and you just start pitching ideas back and forth, and nobody's married to any one thing, and then the next thing you know, you've got just like 75 different options for your storyline. You know.
Yeah.
So a anthology can be enormously helpful in that way, providing you meet some, you know, enthusiastic people in there. Not, you don't always, just, but just like how in an anthology you're not always going to find, not every comic in an anthology series is going to appeal to everybody.
Right.
And so not every personality is going to mesh perfectly, but I can say, you know, when I was working in, with Graphic Smash, I didn't not get along with anybody. I got along with everybody, even though I wasn't necessarily pals with everybody. But you know, the difference between Sugary Serials and the other anthologies out there is Sugary Serials is a little bit closer to something like Flight, where it's all brand new content. This isn't repurposed material,
right.
And the only thing that falls short for me on anthologies is it's or like web portal sites. It just seems like, well, okay, well, this is some common branding, and maybe I'm not seeing all the behind the scenes kind of cooperation that's happening, but from a reader standpoint, it seems like, oh, okay, well, these are just six guys who are just kind of putting all their comics under one brand. There's nothing new here outside of a unified brand. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. It winds up seeming homogenous, and it's not appealing. I like the idea of new content in an anthology.
And the other thing that kind of bums me out sometimes is like, you know, if you've got an anthology series, let's say you've got an anthology where you're repurposing a bunch of strips together, unless you like two or three of the strips, there's really not much to draw you there. If you
right.
only like one of the strips, you know, if you're, let's say you're a big fan of, you know, let's say Oscar and Bunky, just to throw a name into the ether that's not a real comic as far as I know, and then suddenly Oscar and Bunky is listed with a bunch of other comics, and you go, well, if he's with them, I want to check these out, and you go there, and you're like, oh, there's nothing really here for me. I'm just going to stick with Oscar and Bunky, right? There's not much of a
yeah.
draw anymore.
Right.
So it's hit or miss. It's a weird – anthologies are a weird thing, but they can be really, really great, and they have been for me in the past. But, you know, one of the things that I want to do with Sugary Serials that I would feel different is let's make sure that everything in here is brand-new content you can't find anywhere else, so there's a little bit more of a draw for an audience.
Yeah.
Yeah, and let's see. So you've Sugary Serials has been going for, you know, over 4 months, you're saying, since you do one each month, or?
Yeah, we started actually in September. We released a preview book in September.
Okay.
So we've been going for, you know, about going on 6 months now, but we're just in the process. We're closing in on the end of our fifth issue. And then issue six will start up at the beginning of the next month, and it'll update every day. And we're also launching some new features where, with issue six, there will be special hidden pages on the site that you can only get by buying the print editions. It'll be like a code word that you enter to get special downloads. You know, like
smart.
I think
printable.
That should help.
PDFs. Hopefully, we're trying to find ways to give people an incentive to buy the books because we're keeping all the archives for free as well.
Right.
And, I got friends in the print comics industry who cocked their eyebrow. They're like, "What? You're giving it away? What? What are you doing? You're throwing away any chance you have at making any money on this." But my attitude is if you give it, I subscribe to the webcomics banner of if you just give it away, you'll win their support, you'll win their affection,
right.
And then they'll be glad to give you money for the print edition because they want to own it.
Yeah.
And by the way, we also have PSP, PDF, and CVZ downloads for every issue as well. So there's like.
Nice.
Any format I hear about that sounds like people are enjoying comics that way, I try to release the books in that format as well.
Oh, that's very smart.
Kind of sound like the Barnes & Noble of webcomic series, where it's like, well, you don't have to buy it. Just sit in the couch and read it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the main thing is we just want them to read the darn book. So we want to create content that to get more kids reading comics because kids comics, at least in mainstream publishing, it's getting better, but for a long time they weren't really aiming at kids anymore.
Right.
Big, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I think it's awesome that comics are getting more sophisticated and complex and more developed and more variety of genre. But to me, it seems like there needs to be some entry point. There's something for the kids to glom onto to turn them into comics lovers, so that then they can move
right.
on to the more sophisticated and complex stuff.
Kind of sounds like it's kind of like how Nintendo works. It's like everybody else grew up with the older gamers, like with the original gamers, but Nintendo didn't, basically.
Yeah.
I think that's a good comparison, yeah.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask, how has the response been for the turnover from the online, you know, the hits that you've been getting online with all this series, and then from the print as far as people buying them up? Has it been really good? Has it been increasing?
it has been increasing, which is incredibly, you know, encouraging. You know, it started out, I think on the Webcomics Weekly podcast, they once said something where, if you ever change your focus, don't expect all your readers to hang on.
Right.
Yeah.
And, I, for years, was working with my buddy Sarah Turner on our Make Like a Tree comic site, and we were publishing comics, three different comics we were updating all the time on the site, and we had a pretty good fan base there, and I thought for sure, okay, well, when we release Sugary Cereals, all these readers are just going to love this new project. It's a logical extension of what we're already doing. And, you know, not everybody did. So it was a struggle at first getting people to learn about the project and getting people to understand what it is. That's the real struggle that I find is when I've been to a couple conventions now and when I show people the books, the first inclination is, oh, well, don't push this Teletubby stuff on me, you know? Or they say, you know, what are you trying to push, some kind of moral agenda? What are you trying to, like, convert me to some kind of nutty religion? You know, they have, like, that kind of, like, that resistance to it.
Right.
And when I say, no, it's meant for everybody. I mean, you love Transformers, right? And they go, yeah, well, then read this. I bet you'll like this, too. So, but it's not for everybody. I understand that. But the hardest thing, I think, the initial struggle was just getting people to understand that, no, we mean all ages. We don't just mean, you know, three-year-olds. But it has been growing. We've been getting really good responses from readers and from people who are, you know, purchasing the books. And, you know, I had a woman at a convention come back to my table, and she said, you know, she was so ecstatic that she actually could go to a comic show and buy something for her kids.
Cool.
She bought the books, walked away, came back an hour later and thanked me personally because she read the book. And said, I think the word she used was, it was absolutely charming, which... To somebody, say, like, you know, some of those angry British comics writers out there, that might be death, but to me it was, like, the nicest thing I could have heard, you know.
Sweet.
No, as a parent, I agree. It's hard. I wind up going into the old racks and buying my kids, you know, the comics I read when I was little, because there's not a lot out there. So, you know, this is good. It's definitely fulfilling a need.
Yeah, quick tiny anecdote about that is I actually... taught comics while I teach comics at different workshops around my area, and I also did some work in Detroit teaching to five different public schools, teaching comics to kids. Mm-hmm. And when I was involved in the project, one of the people I worked with wanted to buy a bunch of comics to put in the school libraries, and schools were actually agreeing to this, which I was so excited about.
That's great.
When she went to the comic store to get all these comics, she said, well, I bought a bunch of comics at the store I'm going to put in these kids' school libraries. I was like, whoa, wait, I need to look at these. She got Watchmen. That's not good for a fifth grader, you know. But thankfully, the store that she bought the books at was very savvy. They understood, and so they gave her a whole bunch of books that were more, a little bit more suited to that age group. But you have to be careful nowadays, because it's a mixed bag, and there's really no solid rating system yet.
Yeah.
There is movies, you know.
Is there a ratings system?
Well, a lot of books... Well, a lot of companies police themselves. You know, like Marvel has their Marvel Adventures line, DC has their Johnny DC line, but there's nothing as much as like how you clearly see like rated G, rated PG, rated PG-13. It's not as clear and as uniform as it is in film.
Most comic shops kind of do a slapdash job of you know, putting kids' comics low and adult comics high, and really adult comics in their own section. But it's self policing.
And so, and different companies have different standards, you know. It's like Marvel Comics says, you know, let's not have our characters smoke because that endorses smoking to kids. But then they do a series like Civil War, which is obviously very, very geared towards adults.
Yeah.
So it's weird. It's tricky. So, you know, at least I know what my standards are for. I just go by the broadcast standards and practices of television for Sugary Cereals, and we just rate it that way.
All right. Well, cool. That's smart.
Well, there's certainly a lot of information here for anybody interested in getting into printing, or maybe just going with a bunch of friends and making their own anthologies or something like that. And we'll get all these links in the show notes, but this is all the time we have right now for this. Jersey, thanks for coming on the show with us and talking about this.
Oh, anytime. Thanks for having me.
And, well, don't go away just yet. I want to talk to you after I close this up here. We're going to take one more break, and we're going to, you know, basically do the third part of the show and then close it off. And we'll be right back.
We'll
Would you like to get involved with the Beacon? Just send to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com.
Hey guys, this week I'm going to be doing the webcomic review. I switched in some stuff behind the scenes and Diana wasn't able to get something in at the last minute when I was initially recording, but obviously I got this recorded out late since it's already this late on Friday. But I'm going to go ahead and do my own review. And this is a review of the webcomic Marry Me, which is written by Bobby Crosby and drawn by Remy Mokhtar or something. You can find it at marrymemovie.com, where you can find the all-unimportant splash page. As the URL suggests, Bobby has hopes of this comic being the groundwork for an actual movie. I don't know if it will succeed in this aspect, but I can't see it happening if it doesn't update a bit more frequently than every so often. Bobby Crosby also writes a number of other webcomics, including Plus EV, which is a crudely or possibly lazily drawn Texas Hold'em comic, God Mode, a general gamer comic, I think, and Last Blood, which actually has some decent artwork and is about zombies or something. I don't know, I haven't read it. Bobby bills Marry Me as a romantic comedy graphic novel. I'm not really sure if the term graphic novel would be most proper, as I'd go with movie storyboard as webcomic for sale as comic book. Anyway, when I say that this comic is designed to become a movie, I don't mean that it has independent movie qualities bent on pushing the envelope. I mean, at least thus far, it feels like it wants to be the next Hollywood romantic comedy. Like, we haven't seen enough of that crap. I don't think I'll spoil it too much for you, but if you want no spoilers, plug your ears for the next, I don't know, 15 seconds. The premise is that the main character, pop singer, who apparently has a lot of integrity but is a daddy's girl, gets stressed out so much that she decides to just up and marry some random guy on stage during a show just because he's holding a Marry Me sign, which apparently was the guy's friend that's a girl, and who is not that far from being a crazy stalker. And now cue about anything Hollywood like that you could do to make things feel more expected and typical. The comic isn't done yet, and I'm fairly certain that it's not even halfway done. And right now, all I'm hoping for is that the ending doesn't turn out to be one of the three typical outcomes for this type of Hollywood premise that it would lead to. I'm hoping for something unexpected and original, but that could be almost too much to expect in almost anything. As far as the art goes, Remy, whose main comic is No Pink Ponies, is no amateur artist, but he certainly doesn't appear to be improving himself, at least not for this paid project. Let's just say that Marry Me looks like Pink Ponies. And the main characters of each comic almost look exactly alike, as well as a number of other characters who seem to have the same faces. No Pink Ponies 2, Marry Me, has much better color than NPP, as well as a bit more care in the work, but it still seems more of the same, but it works, I guess. Another thing that irks me is that when something absurd is said, in which it would invoke the other characters to do a take, they all have this single expression when they do their take. This unnatural, forced expression in which the jaw drops as though they have robotic jaws that just broke the springs holding it in place. Or better yet, they look like those Russian soldier nutcrackers ready to break open walnuts or something. Anyway, now, be clear, I'm not saying that this is a bad comic, it's just average. I'm not a fan of drama or dramatic comedies or romantic comedies. I'm not wowed by the story or the art, but Marry Me is one of those comics where you keep checking it and reading it, but you really don't know why. Perhaps, you know, we're all the main characters, you know, all the main characters, but you don't really connect with any of them, and you really don't like how the story is going, but you keep reading because you hope it gets better, because you want to really like it, but it certainly is not that important in your bookmarks or favorites folder. Kind of like the webcomic Candy. Anyway, that being said, Marry Me seems to be fairly popular, so I'm guessing it's more in line with the pop society of webcomic viewers out there. But who knows? You may or may not like it, or you may think that it's just okay, and that's about as best as I can tell you.
Let's hear some webcomic impressions from Aaron Edwards.
Hey guys, I have some stuffs to show ya. First, we have Split Shift at longfuckingurl.com. At 20 strips, it starts with Misty, a crazy pink-dressed blonde who just got fired for being a homeless. Her new roommate literally falls out of the sky during a failed suicide attempt. This goth girl rocker, Amy, gets Misty a job at the local emo cafe to help pay the rent. The art is some weird combo between paint characters and polygon backgrounds, and while full color, the proportions and designs are pretty shitty. The dialogue is super stiff, and the story moves way too fucking fast. And then there's the typos, which never happen with such a small amount of scripting. Add another craptastic sight design that scales down the art resolution until you click on the strip, and this one is an all-round fucking disaster. Please fix everything now. Next, we have Poly Plus Morphs at 4LFA.com. This is a 3-panel sprite and vector comic about a pair of boyfriend-girlfriend squares and their cat. It's another gamer-slash-pop-culture comic, but manages to have a unique and cleverly endearing voice. The creator knows how to tell short, jabbing jokes, and the simplistic art only adds to the punchlines. This simply affirms my long-standing opinion that fun dialogue writing can turn any tired premise into an enjoyable work of comic art. The Polymorphs at 4LFA.com is made of win. That's all for this week. Bye.
Find more from Aaron at anatoly.com.
Hey, listeners, if you recall, I usually talk about stripfight.org each week now, and the current one, the round 145, Pets Gone Wild, the submissions are in and they're ready for you to vote on, and you have until February 25th to vote on those, as well as you have until February 25th to enter round 146, which is themed Last Person on Earth. So get those entries in and visit stripfight.org. Well, you know, actually, Diana Nock, who does our webcomic reviews, has been working on a submission for the sugary cereals as well. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
That's because I did not tell you.
No, you did not.
she's working on a two-parter, I believe. And I believe she said it's going to be set up for Sugary Cereals number 8. So definitely they do work on that stuff well in advance.
Yeah.
And I know I think tonight that she's working on the lettering for at least part 1. So that's almost done, and she's going to send it over to Jersey. So that'll be kind of cool. And of course we'll let everyone know when that goes up. But still, everyone should check out sugarycereals.com and check it out. And yeah, the printing is really, really good, and I've gotten, like you said, the replacements that he sent me. Also, it's the more traditional bound book, which is black and white and a little bit of grayscale. It looks really crisp. So, you know, it's a good another alternative to Lulu.com and some other ones out there. So it's like more options, the better, I guess, for people interested in printing. That's pretty much it for this week. You know, and anyone, people, I mean, okay, people could have gotten a free copy of Sugary Cereals number one if they just sent in some questions, but you didn't send any questions in, so I took down the post, so you guys get nothing now. So it's like, you know, really, you know, try to email us something, maybe less than 150 words, or because otherwise you just it's really too long to talk about. When it gets to be about 200 words, it's about a minute of talking. So, but other than that, Tanya, how else can they get involved?
People can try calling in with an audio file, 15 to 60 seconds, pertaining to the week's subject at hand. Just state your name or screen name, your site at the beginning, and send it to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. You may also be able to leave a voicemail by finding Fessworks, that's Fesworks, on Skype.
Also read that.
Also, if you've hit a webcomic milestone, let us know. Have you hit 100 comics, 200, 300? Or maybe you hit your first full year of updates, second or third? We'll try to post or mention all of them in our next show.
And yes, there's been one person that says they're reaching a milestone soon, but they're too far away from their 400th milestone, so I will not tell it yet. So they have to get a little bit farther along. So basically, if you're going to reach it in about a week, you can go ahead and let us know, but we probably are not going to tell people that you hit your milestone until you hit it, or by the time the show airs that you will have hit it. But if you've already reached it within the last 30 days of an upcoming show and we have not mentioned it, go ahead and tell and let us know. You know, we're not going to be real sticklers. I mean, if it was like 2 months ago, well, it's probably a little bit too late. But go ahead and let's see here. What else do we have to say?
Next week.
Oh, yes, next week. Anyone remember our webcomic brainstorming session we had with Eric and...
Those other people?
Gothia was on there.
Huh? Yeah.
Oh, I forget the other person's name. Anyway, those
Tom?
People... Was it Tom?
Tom? Maybe.
I don't remember.
We suck.
Yeah. Those people will be back next week for a brainstorm session number two, picking up where we left off. And Tanya, you're not going to be here, are you?
I'm abandoning you again. I've got a New York Dolls concert to go to on Tuesday. And,
well, whatever.
David Johansen is more important than you.
Whatever. I'm going to look for somebody else to be my co-host for that time. And, so that'll be it. I think let's see, what is this week? We're all like all over the place here. Yeah, the end of this week, if you hadn't already done it by the time, who knows, it might be too late by the time this show is already out. Your very last chance to vote for the Web Cartoonist Choice Awards is up on the 22nd, and yeah, it may already be over by the time this episode quote unquote airs, but and then just, I think from there, you can check out ccawards.com and see when they're going to be announcing the winners. And I believe the webcomic podcast, the GigCast, is actually going to be doing it live from MegaCon, I believe.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then, of course, you can check out on theirs. And then we'll still report the winners on our podcast as well for those who listen to us and not the GigCast. Though I recommend it anyway.
Yeah.
So... Anyway, we got to get out of here. Webcomic Beacon is over. This has been Fess.
And this is Tanya.
That's all for the Beacon. Be sure to tune in next week.